and Answers begins right now.
You are tuned to Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukren. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. We all have people in our lives that are argumentative and hostile towards those that they disagree with. So how can you effectively share Christ with someone like this? Jesus, being the master apologist, demonstrated how to engage an argumentative person and turn a frustrating conversation into a fruitful one. The last time we were together, Pat shared 5 questions in which you can have fruitful conversations with skeptics. Log on at evidenceandanswers.org, and there you will find this discussion entitled The Hawaii 5-0 Questions, and find hundreds more podcasts that you may listen to or download. Now let's get right into today's broadcast.
One of the reasons you're having trouble is because if objective evil exists, then there's an absolute standard of good by which you're measuring it by. Where did that absolute standard of good come from? Can't have a moral law without a moral law giver. All right? And so by using question 1, what do you mean by that, we were able to turn the tables. And it went from a hostile challenge in the beginning to a very fruitful conversation after that. Right. The second one is, how did you come to that conclusion? Okay, that helps you understand the basis for someone's beliefs. And when you ask this question, don't just let someone state their position. You need to press them a little bit. Ask them for the evidence to support their claim. See, the burden of proof is not always on the Christian. Throw it back on them. If they can give you good reasons for why they believe, or if they have good reasons for why they believe, or if they just feel strongly about something. It's not always your job to defeat their claims or support your claims. It's their job to also defend theirs. And listen to their explanation. See if they have good reasons and credible evidence for why they believe. I remember I was at a Christian camp there in California, up in the Santa Cruz Mountains there at Mount Hermon. And a friend that same lawyer introduced me to another atheist friend that he had. And we sat down and I said, how'd you come to that conclusion of being an atheist? And he stated, well, because religion is the source of much evil in the world. Of course, I pressed him on it. I said, how did you come to that conclusion? And he said, well, the Crusades, you know, I've studied the Crusades and the slaughtering of people in the name of Christ and Allah, that's just evil. That's what it is. I said, okay. I said, there's 7 Crusades. Some of them never even made it to the Holy Land. So which one are you talking about? And he was taken aback and he just said, well, I guess I really haven't studied the Crusades, you know? And I said, well, just out of curiosity, what caused the Crusades? There must be a reason why the Knights of Europe decided to go down there. I mean, was it just, hey, I heard there's Muslims there. I don't know what they believe. Let's go kill them, you know? I mean, what caused the Crusades here? And he was kind of set back. He said, well, he finally admitted. He said, well, I guess I really didn't. I haven't studied the Crusades, you know? So I said, well, okay, what is the real reason for your atheism? All right. So using that question, we were able to show he was able to realize for himself, really, he really hadn't thought it through. He really didn't have good reasons. He had a conclusion, but not good reasons for that conclusion. Often, you may find yourself in a situation where you're overmatched. And when you're in a situation like that, just keep burden of proof on the other person. All right. Just keep asking questions. But when they ask you, why you keep asking, you disagree? Prove your point. Why do you believe? Why do you oppose? Why do you disagree? If it's an arena you're not familiar with, you can just say, I'm not making a point. I'm just trying to find out about your position. I'm asking reasons for yours. I'm not making a point. I'm trying to make a decision here, and I'm listening, trying to see how you came to your conclusions, all right? Don't fall into the trap of letting them turn the tables on you. You don't want to make statements or get into a place where you have to prove your position, just keep asking questions. Okay. You want to be in what we call fact-finding mode there and ask them to clarify and ask questions. And in a situation where you're overmatched, you can end by saying, "That was very interesting. Let me go home and think about it." Okay. But that's question number two. All right. How did you come to that conclusion? Question number three is really my favorite. How do you know that's true? All right. How do you know that's true? You're asking them to clearly state why they're so sure of their position. What kind of reasons and evidence, and how good is it, is the evidence that they have to support their position? And often, to their surprise, they may end up discovering they don't really have solid grounds for their position. I remember I take my students in my world religions class, I take them on a temple tour. And when we're at the one year, we were at the Hare Krishna temple, and they were waxing eloquent about the Bhagavad Gita and reincarnation, and that the universe was 400 billion years old when Krishna came and visited mankind, and all of these things. And then they said, "Are there any questions?" And our students asked some questions. And they were getting kind of frustrated with him because he was really blending Christianity with Hinduism. And eventually I asked the question of the Hindu professor. I said, "Let me ask you this. How do you know what you believe is true? How do you know?" And that professor, was stuck a little bit, and he looked at his disciples, and he said, "Let me turn that to my disciples and let them answer that question for you." And I knew he was just buying time because he wanted to try to come up with an answer. And we looked over at his students, and none of them were answering. They were just kind of smiling and kind of laughing. And he finally asked one of the older women, "How do you know that Krishna is true?" And she said, "Try it. Try it. You'll only know if you try it." So I said, "Well, basically, it's subjective, right? I mean, some kind of feeling or experience you've had." And she paused for a little bit, and she looked back and said, "Well, Professor, is that right?" And I looked over at him, and he said, "Well, yes, try it. You'll discover the experience and peace of Krishna." And I said, "Okay." I said, "A Buddhist may answer he's experienced, peace through that. An atheist might experience some kind of peace in his atheism. A New Ager might experience peace in his, avatar or whatever it may be." I said, "But basically, you're saying it's subjective, right?" And he thought about it for a while. He said, "Well, I guess." Then he looked at me and said, "How do you know what you believe is true as a Christian?" And I thought, "You'd never ask, And I said, "Well, we base it not only on experience, but on facts and the evidence as well. And the Christian worldview best explains the origin and the design of the universe." I went into that a little bit, and I said, "It's best explained. It's the person of Christ who claimed to be the divine Son of God and confirmed it through his miraculous, sinless life and resurrection. And that we have a lot of historical evidence on that." And he paused for a bit, and he said, "Well, science is always changing, but the Hindu scriptures don't change. And so we don't base it on science, but on the Hindu scriptures." And I said, "Well, how do you know the Hindu scriptures are true? Because they seem to go against the scientific evidence. Hindu scriptures teach that the universe is eternal, but the scientific evidence, and the Bible also teaches that the universe has a beginning. All right? So how do we know the Hindu scriptures are true?" All right? He finally just had to come back and say, "Well, you just have to experience it." I said, "So it is subjective." And then there was a pause, and I didn't want to press him because we're at his temple, and we're invited guests, so I didn't want to get him all upset, so I just kind of backed off. I said, "Well, thank you, But you could see that everyone in that room, the wheels were beginning to click. And I looked over at his disciples, and you could see it as well that they needed to answer that question, how do you know what you believe is true? And it was a way to really plant the seed of doubt, or as Greg Kochel says, put the pebble in their shoe to begin to really ask questions about what it is they believe and why they believe it, and really, is it true? All right. And hopefully that pebble in the shoe keeps bothering them to the point where they really ask those critical questions, and perhaps they're become more open, right, to another belief system like the gospel message of Christ. All right. That's number three. How do you know it's true? Number four, where did you get your information? Where did you get your information? All right. So this allows you to evaluate the source of the person's information. And often the person may not have a reliable source, but they've never been challenged on it. And they might come to realize, well, wait a minute, I really don't have good evidence for my position here. I remember, we were in a restaurant and happened to be with Greg Kokel here in Hawaii after a conference. And a waiter came up and we engaged in conversation with the waiter. And then the waiter kind of asked us, oh, so, where are you guys from? And Greg says he's from California. And he asked Greg, well, why are you here? And he said, well, I'm here for an apologetics conference here that Pat here hosts, presenting compelling reasons and evidence for how we know Christianity is true. And the guy looked and he said, oh, he said, I used to be a Christian. In fact, I used to go to the Bible college here in Hawaii, but I saw that Christianity wasn't true, so I no longer, believe in Christ. And Greg said, oh, how'd you come to that conclusion? And the guy said, well, I saw, I've studied, and so the Gospels are not, a historically reliable document, but it come from Greek mythology. And the next question was, where did you get that information? The guy said, well, I studied, scholars, and we pressed him, said, well, where? What scholars? Where did you get that information? Who are the scholars you read? And I said, we've actually studied, this is the stuff we study. So if you mention someone very credible, we'll probably know who he is. And finally he admitted, well, he saw a 10-minute YouTube video, and Greg said, what? A 10-minute YouTube video caused you to lose your faith? And again, he started backing off, and Greg said, here, this is my business card, and this is Pat's business card. You come talk to us, man. Don't let a 10-minute video turn you away from the truth. And the guy said, well, okay, maybe I'll look into it. But you could see that he was very uncomfortable because he came to realize the source of his information isn't very good or credible. And did he want to base his conclusion on information that's really, not that credible or strong, or is there another reason why he turned away from the faith that he really didn't want to confront? But that was a great example that I saw firsthand of using the Hawaii 5-0 questions. Where did you get your information? All right. And the last one, what if you're wrong? What if you're wrong? This one is spin off of Pascal's wager, right? Basically, you're asking the implications of other worldviews and religions. Really, they're not so bad, but the implications for rejecting Christ, if Christianity is true, is quite severe. You want to ask this question for the person who's not taking the issue seriously or really trying to just blow you off. I remember, when I was in Europe and a person said, was an atheist, and I was about to present to him the evidence for the truth of Christianity. He said, oh, no, I don't want to hear it. I just want to live, party, and die. And he said, I've heard the arguments for atheism. If atheism is true, then life is meaningless. There's no significance, or we all end in annihilation. He said, I don't really care about that. So what if I end up annihilated? Big deal. Just party till I die. Live for the moment and enjoy it, and then I'm gone. So big deal. And so I said, well, what if you're wrong? He said, what do you mean? I said, well, if atheism is true, I, as a Christian, haven't lost anything. I die and turn to dirt. That's pretty much it. If Hinduism or Buddhism is true and I'm wrong in my Christian faith, I just get reincarnated and I try it all over again. But I said, if Christianity is true, and there is some powerful evidence that shows that it is true, the consequences are incredibly significant. You spend eternity with God forever, or eternally separated from Him, quarantined in a place called hell. And Hebrews 9:13 27, it's appointed to each man to die once, and then comes the judgment. There's really no second chance. So do you want to gamble, on something you really haven't studied that has significant consequences like that? And he gave a very nervous laugh. He said, "Oh, I think I'll take the gamble." But you could see he was laughing quite nervously, and you could see the wheels really beginning to turn. So that when I met him the second day in the cafe, he was willing to sit there and listen to the evidence for Christ and the gospel message. Now, he didn't receive Christ that day, but you could see that we had put the pebble in the shoe, that really we're really getting him to think about the truth of the gospel message of Christ. Okay, so those are the Hawaii 5-0 killer questions there that I like to use in some form or another. All right, so that even if the person doesn't want to really engage in spiritual conversations through these questions, you actually, if you ask them well and with interest, really you'll get to see people engage with you in dialogues that can often lead to Jesus Christ. Now, when you're asking these questions, you're looking for, as you're asking these questions, you're looking for flaws that you can point out to the person, contradictory statements or hasty overgeneralizations. Some people may know a Christian who embezzled money, from a ministry. There's a lot out there, and therefore they say, therefore, Christianity is corrupt, can't be true. Well, that's a hasty overgeneralization there. Are all Christians stealing money from the ministry? Are all Christians molesting children? No, vast majority are not. You're looking for things like straw man arguments or misunderstandings of the Bible, false caricatures there, misconceptions that need to be corrected, judging Christianity by the failure of its followers and not its founder, Christ. You're looking, emotional arguments, arguments that basically, they're emotional arguments but don't have any really substance there. Those are kind of things that you can look out and point out to the person. I remember talking with a person who said, one reason I'm not a Christian is because Christians are taught to hate homosexuals and transgender people. But I have to work with those people all the time. I just can't hate them or discriminate against them or anything. I have to work with them. And I looked and I said, well, yeah, the Bible doesn't teach us to hate anyone because they live differently or they believe differently. And Jesus said, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. I mean, he was the supreme example on the cross. He said, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. So Christianity doesn't teach us to hate people. But I said, there is such thing as truth and error. It's our responsibility, if there is error, to point out the error and point people to the truth. Because as Jesus said, it's the truth that will set you free. We're designed to live according to truth, not to live in error. In fact, it's very unloving to know that someone is an error or believing something that is false and not point it out to them and point them to truth. Because really, it's truth that brings hope and healing to a person, not letting them continue to live in error. That's the most unloving thing you can do. So you want to clear up misconceptions and emotional arguments like that as they are presenting their answers here. So the Hawaii 5-0 questions, some of the best in dealing with some of those really hardened skeptics there. Now, how do you go about getting good at this stuff, really perfecting your technique? How do you get good at this? Well, it's kind of like sports or piano. You have to keep practicing your skills, all right? Rehearse them and then actually try them out in real life situations. That's really the best way to develop and improve. And sometimes you'll do great, and sometimes you'll have to reflect on it and say, oh, here's what I could have done better. So after each encounter, take time to reflect on the conversation and see how you could improve. You know, a football team looks at films, or a basketball team will look at films after each game to see how they could improve. And we've got to do the same. Reflect after every encounter. Ask yourself, do I know enough about the issue? What do I need to brush up on? Was I practicing gentleness and respect? 1 Peter 3:15. Could I have said things better? You know, often when I'm on live radio and I get asked a question, later on as I'm driving home from the studio, I'll think about, you know, how did I respond? Could I have done better? What information could I have presented? Or how could I have said things better? Or what question of the big five should I have asked that person in that situation? You know, so you reflect on it. And then as you do and as you have more dialogues, you learn how to anticipate a conversation. Think of questions that you might get asked and how you would respond. And rehearse it through your mind and maybe out loud. Now, I remember doing that as I was walking down the stairs outside of a building once, and I didn't realize that, you know, someone had come out and they were right behind me. And they must have heard me talking out loud like this, and they must have thought, this guy's nuts, you know, he's lost his marbles. But that's the kind of stuff you want to do. Just kind of rehearse it in your mind or out loud. Or if you can, practice it with a friend. And then when you encounter that situation again, you know, you're much more prepared. It's kind of like, you know, when we used to do jiu-jitsu, we would be practicing all these moves and anticipating this or anticipating that, so that in a match when it really happened or something similar to it, we were much better prepared. So those are some ways you can help improve in your technique, okay, in engaging in these kinds of discussions. You know, often when you read books or you go to seminars where people like me are presenting, you know, often, you know, we're giving you successful examples, all right, because we only have time to present one or two examples. And so we're trying to give you the best ones of how a particular technique or practice works. But we don't tell you of the dozens of other times we failed, all right, in trying out techniques or engaging in different conversations when things didn't go so well. But each time we sit back and we reflect upon it, and then we evaluate, and then we improve so that when we have another encounter that's similar, we improve and do much better. But, you know, even the greats, Dr. Geisler, Greg Kochel, and others, if you sat down with them for a cup of coffee, I mean, they'll tell you a lot of the conversations they did not do so well. But that was a great teaching moment where they could reflect and learn so that when it happened again, they were much better prepared for it. All right. So here in dealing, you know, with a hardened skeptic, don't always feel the burden is always on you to prove your point. Learn how to turn the tables and put the burden back on them. And then you'll find that conversations with skeptics can be much more fruitful, much more enjoyable, and you'll be able, all right, to not only expose flaws in their particular ideas, but then it also gives you open avenues, invitations, really, to share your position and the truth of Christ, all right? So that's how we turn the tables from a hostile conversation to a fruitful conversation where you can take control, take it in the direction you want it to go, and have a fruitful discussion about Jesus Christ.
Our time today has come to a close. Be sure to join us again here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat by calling him in Hawaii That number there is 483-0586. Or email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio for you to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit that subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts like Pat's on the air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Once again, log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Evidence and Answers is grateful for one of our sponsors, the Honolulu Christian Church. If you don't have a home church and are looking for a great place to grow in your faith, check out the Honolulu Christian Church. For service times, log in at honoluluchristian.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran.